One. Max Egan is a radio talk show host, researcher, artist, musician, philosopher, free thinker, champion for the truth, and a true Renaissance man. Max is the man behind the website thecrowhouse.com, which is filled with great information for those seeking the truth, and Veritas listeners know, and certainly they are seeking the truth. And directly from the land down under, I'm really, really privileged to welcome our friend and brother in truth, Max Egan. Hello, Max, and welcome back to Veritas. How are you?
I'm good, Mel. Thanks you very much for having me on again, brother. It's always a pleasure to come and talk to you.
Oh, it's always a privilege and a pleasure to have you on. You know, I follow your travels. I know that recently you were somehow under the weather. Are you better now?
Oh, look, I'm getting better. I'm about 30% of what I should be. I'm recovering from meningitis, which is a very, very serious illness. Put me in bed for 10 days. Just dropped me like a stone and nearly died, actually, Mel. So I'm lucky to be here talking to you.
Absolutely.
I am recovering. I'm getting better every day. Every day is like a 1 or 2% improvement. So it's good.
And I can feel what it feels, because a few years ago I was telling this to you offline. I was having headaches for days. I couldn't see the light. Went to the doctor and they said, you have a sinus infection. And I said, sinus infection, but I don't have any congestion. Well, went back home. 2 days later, my fever was so high, I was delirious. I was probably having it was incredible. So went to the emergency room, and another doctor said to me, it seems like you have meningitis. We may have to do a spinal tap on you, which I refused. So they made me sign a release, because they said you can actually die when you go home. Obviously, it was viral meningitis. I presume that's what you had, too.
Yeah, it was very bad, very bad.
You know, the reason why I mentioned this is because we have Ebola now. We'll discuss this whole Ebola thing. With so much misdiagnosis in the United States, shouldn't the World Health Organization call that a pandemic too? Is a misdiagnosis of medical, you know, practice a huge pandemic too?
Well, yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, but they call anything a pandemic, Mel. Remember a couple of years ago with the swine flu, there were 20 cases? 20 cases, and the World Health Organization called a level 6 pandemic.
Level 6, that's right.
You know, I mean, 20 people. I mean, you wouldn't, malaria is more of a pandemic than Ebola or anything. I mean, malaria is all over the globe. Why don't we call a pandemic on that? I mean, it's ridiculous, really, the way they do these things, you know.
You know, with the swine flu, I remember, as you said, just a few cases around the world. In the United States alone, that year alone, the year before, thousands of people died of the regular flu. Why wasn't the WHO putting a pandemic level for that and stopping the borders, people, tourists coming here? I remember how Mexico was affected by that whole shebang.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about fear porn, Mel, is what it's really about. That's what a lot of this Ebola scare is, I think. It's just fear, fear, fear. Put the fear in the people. Get them expecting an outbreak of some terrible disease. I think it's very interesting that the American CDC actually owns the patent on Ebola. I mean, what's that doing there? You know, so you've got to wonder about this. And you know, that we're hearing of thousands of people dying from Ebola. I haven't seen one picture of one body that's been bled out. I haven't seen any of this stuff. I know people all around the world, and they're saying that they're not seeing any of it where they are. So I wonder about the whole thing, how much of it's just fabricated, you know.
You know, part of my circle of friends, Max, are medical doctors. So I told two of them the other day, that the CDC owns the patent to one of the strains of the Ebola virus. So they asked me, okay, Mr. Conspiracy Theorist, are you saying the CDC created the virus? And I said, no, but why would they own the patent to it if they did not? That made
exactly.
them think, Max.
Exactly. That's what I said on my show last week. I said, am I suggesting that they created it? No, but the patent is suggesting that they did. Otherwise, why does the patent exist? I mean, where did this thing come from? What's its purpose, you know? Obviously, someone patented a virus. You know, it's they're telling us. I mean, it's right there for all to see, you know. And I'm not, like you say, so I'm not saying they created it, but the patent says they did.
Well, isn't that telling us that it is a bioweapon?
Of course. It is a bioweapon, and, you know, whether it's as dangerous as they say it is, I mean, I don't know, the amount of quarantine and locking down they're doing, like this nurse they've locked up for 21 days, for the incubation period. She's going to sue the US government for being locked up for 21 days. Anybody who's got a sniffle, anybody who's got a cough, they're just quarantining whole aircrafts of people. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the world's sort of gone mad in the last 6 months. Have you noticed? It's out of control. But ISIS, I mean, there's so much going on now. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, I really think the powers that believe they be are running scared, and they're just bringing everything that they can out of the box and throwing it all at us to try to keep us locked down.
My wife and daughter, about a month and a half or two ago, we came back from being out of town, out of the country, and I think we just drank the water somewhere else when we got sick. And we displayed all the symptoms of Ebola on the plane. And days later is when the whole Ebola thing started. If we had arrived a few days later, we'd probably be quarantined still right now. But you just came back from your journey throughout Europe, I believe. You say you were mainly an observer during this trip. What did you observe? What did you find different this time?
Well, I was just really interested in looking at the programming with people and hearing what they were discussing about. And it's really interesting, the programming through Europe. You know, I mean, Europe is an amazing place because it's such a small community, really. I mean, I come from Australia, and all of Europe is half the size of Australia. So when I travel across Europe, I don't really feel like I'm traveling anywhere. I'm kind of just driving from one town to the next in Australia, you know, in these same circumstances. So it's really interesting seeing the level of programming in each particular country and the differences in each particular country. There's a massive amount of fear in Europe, mainly of their governments. Everybody's in fear of their governments. And there's this huge anti-Islam program that's just running everywhere, which is quite shocking, really. I mean, as a result of ISIS and all this sort of stuff. And if you look at ISIS, I mean, ISIS, this is a Western-controlled operation, absolutely. It's got nothing to do with Islamism. It's a Western-controlled operation which is designed to create World War III, you know, turn the world against the Muslim world. And again, of course, once we've exterminated the Muslim world, then, of course, it will turn to the Christian world and it'll get rid of them as well. So it's really interesting seeing how this is playing out through Europe. And just the level of programming that they have. I was amazed in Germany, actually, the programming in Germany. The guilt of the German people is so ingrained into their psyche that you can't even suggest to them that they may, you know, they should maybe look at things a little differently. You cannot tell them that they're not guilty. They have to be guilty. It's who they are. It's their whole personality. It's their whole culture. It's absolutely amazing to see. I think the people in Germany have been brutalized, actually, and it was amazing. It was really interesting to just sort of step back and just sort of be in conversations, but not really be part of the conversations. Just sort of listen to what everybody else is talking about and just sort of see where they're going and where their consciousness is, you know. And a lot of the world's unfortunately still asleep. I mean, there are pockets of resistance, there are pockets of wakefulness all around the place, but even those who are awake, in inverted commas, many of them are only half awake. You know, many of them are still looking for the way out. They can't see that the way out lies with them. You know, it's a personal thing. We can all do it, but we all have to participate. Everyone's waiting for someone to come along and present the silver bullet to them, you know. So that's interesting.
One of the reasons why I love to have you on, Max, is because I don't have to fear what I'm going to say. You know, I don't like to censor. Sometimes I have tact in what I'm saying to the guests because they may not be on board with certain topics. So with you, I can just open the door and get everything out without any fear of repercussion. But speaking of ISIS or ISIL or whatever you want to call it these days, just like Monsanto changed the name of NutraSweet to AminoSweet to hoodwink people, did they, quote unquote, they change the name Al-Qaeda to ISIS?
Well, it's the same group of people. I mean, really, you know, Al-Qaeda was a Western fabrication, the whole lot of it all the way. And when you look at ISIS, I mean, these are the rebels that they used to overthrow Libya, and they went over and they destabilized Syria. And now they're rampaging through Iraq. I mean, the American and Israeli interests want to go in and bomb the hell out of these countries, and they've been getting a massive backlash from their population to do it. So right on cue, we have these ISIL or ISIS militants suddenly arrive. And you look at the head of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, he's already been pointed out as being a Jewish Mossad agent by a French report. And there's also the Chechen president has just named him as a CIA asset. So, I mean, this is, when you look at ISIL, what they're doing, they're rampaging across all of these countries that the West wants to go in and bomb, and they're killing everybody. They're saying these guys are Islamic extremists, but they're not. They're just extremists. Islamic only in name, because they do not represent Islam at all. They're killing, Islamic people. They're killing Muslims. They're killing Christians. They're killing Jews. They're killing everybody. And they're doing everything against what it is to be a Muslim. They're disobeying the Quran in as many ways as they possibly can. So why these people would be named as Muslim extremists, it's ridiculous. They're not Muslim extremists at all. They're just extremists. When you really look at it, it's a group that's been put together by someone who hates Muslims, because the whole operation is designed to vilify Muslims and create a war against the Muslim world.
Oh, I'm losing your audio, Max.
How about, can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. Listen, I know where this conversation is going, and I expected some of the electronic disturbances that may happen throughout the conversation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, you get that, don't you? It's funny that. But what you get with this, I mean, there is a Christian group, of course, isn't there, called Blackwater, which changed their name to Z, run by a fundamental Christian extremist called Eric Prince.
Yeah.
I would suggest that this is the man behind a lot of the ISIS stuff. I'd say that most of ISIS are Mossad, Blackwater, Z, CIA. There's you can see pictures of these guys. You see pictures of the Israeli police arresting youths in the West Bank, and they got black balaclavas, they got Palestinian cloths around their neck. They look exactly like the ISIS fighters. Amazing that. There's also a photograph I've got of an ISIS fighter on the back of a truck who has a U.S. Army tattoo on his arm. You know, these guys are Blackwater mercs. These guys are groups of people who hate Muslims. And of course, once you start a group like this and you start rampaging across the country, it's really easy to bring extremists in and all these sorts of disgruntled people are going to want to join. And so it ends up being this hodgepodge of extremists and this and that. I mean, there's always going to be religious extremists that come in and do the wrong thing. Now, they're going to just want to, they've got all this animosity in them, all this hatred, all this fire. They want to go in and do something. So they join these groups. But it's, where does the group come from? You've got to look at what purpose does this group serve? It doesn't serve Islam in any way. What it does is it serves Western interests. Therefore, it's a Western run group. Of course it is. I mean, someone tell me how this benefits Islam. How this does anything to Islam, Islamic State. I mean, what is this? And why, if this is an Islamic State, why are they killing so many Muslims? Why are they doing everything they can against the Quran? Why are they destroying the name of Islam right around the world and turning the whole world against Islam? What are they, this group of rebels seriously think they can take on the United States, the most powerful military in the world? Of course they don't. It's a joke. It's all been cooked up to whip up Western fervor and whip up Western sentiment and anti-Islamic sentiment. And if you really look at it, I mean, I think Israel's got a big hand in all of this, because if you look at the plan, it's always been to destroy the Muslim world and then to turn around and destroy the Christian world. That's what it's all about. And I think that we really need to look at Israel in this whole situation to see where this is coming from. And it came on right on cue, as Israel was actually imploding because of its actions into Gaza. Right on cue comes ISIS, and all of the attention is suddenly diverted to this terrible terrorist organization, which is a radical Islamist organization that we must destroy because it is such a threat to Israel, and yet it seems to attack everybody except Israel. What's going on there?
You know, Years ago I visited Granada in the southern part of Spain, and I was close to the Palace of Alhambra. And walking the streets with the tour guide, I noticed there were mosques, churches, and synagogues right next to each other. And I said, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. And I said to her, the people at one point in time practiced their religion freely like this? Oh, yeah. Years ago, people used to, you know, when the Moors used to be around here, they would practice their religion and they would live, you know, right next to each other in harmony. And that's during the Moors time in southern Spain. But speaking of ISIS, and we're not blowing smoke here, folks, you can go to ISISHQ.com. Months ago, somebody sent me this website. It's Integrated Systems Improvement Services, Inc. And what do? They provide international security and intelligence services. Their acronym is ISIS. And they're right here, 45 minutes away from me in Fort Huachuca, Arizona, right next to a big, big army base. So sometimes they say the criminal hides right in front of the people. Somebody shoots somebody, and instead of running, he stays right there so that he knows nobody will find him. But what are the chances that this Blackwater-like company called ISIS is different than the real ISIS that's out there doing all these acts?
Well, exactly. You know, exactly. I mean, the whole thing is a Western-run operation. It's very obvious that it's a Western-run operation. You know, in all of these situations, you've got to ask yourself who benefits from this situation. How would the Muslims benefit from this? Yeah, cui bono. Who benefits from this? How, and somebody point out to me how the Muslim community, or even if they wanted to create an Islamic State, how it can benefit from the actions of ISIS. I mean, you've got, okay, this group of terrible terrorists running around, cutting off people's heads and doing all these things, but look, seriously, do you really seriously think these people can take over the world? Of course they can't. They're guys on horseback and car with light weapons. You know, they might have a few RPGs and stuff that the United States supplies them. But, I mean, you're talking about major superpowers against these people. There's no way they can win. All their purpose is to destabilize the Middle East and pave the way for Western intervention. That's what it's all about. And the West has a track record of doing this. Whenever we want to go in somewhere, we go in and we create a terrorist organization there, and then we've got to go in and bomb them. The same as what we did in Afghanistan, the same as what happened in Iraq, the same as what's going on everywhere. So people really have to look at this and ask who benefits. What would this ultimately lead to? And what it will ultimately lead to is the destruction of the Muslim world. So who wants the Muslim world destroyed? Israel. Okay, that's who wants it all done. So that's who's behind all of this. And when you look at the Greater Israel Project, I mean, listen to my friend Ken O'Keefe. Anybody out there, go to Ken O'Keefe's website and have a listen to some of the things he tells you about the Greater Israel Project. This man's been on the case for a long time. He's a dear friend of mine. I trust him implicitly. He's got a heart of gold. And he tells you all about the Greater Israel Project. And it's a real project, and it is going on. And that's who's behind all this. It's obvious that that's who's behind all of this. And the war rhetoric that we're seeing from all of our nations now, I mean, Canada's becoming warlike. Australia's becoming warlike. Everybody wants to jump on board and go and kill ISIS, you know. It's a joke, and it's just fear porn, and it's just getting all of our countries involved in this conflict between East and West. That's what it's all about. And all this war rhetoric they're doing with Russia now. I mean, Russia bailed the United States out 12 months ago, and now they're putting sanctions on them. I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And Putin's been saying the same thing for the last 10 years, and no one's been listening to him, and he's getting a little frustrated now. And, you know, I don't think they're going to get away with it, Mel. I think the world has to stand up and pay attention. I think many, many people are now. People are realizing that this just isn't on. Our governments are not telling us the truth. They're not doing the right thing. They're not doing the right thing by their people. They're not doing the right thing by their countries. You know, we have rogue governments. All Western governments have gone rogue, and that's the sad fact of the matter. Most especially in this country. I mean, what's going on here in the last, couple of years since Tony Abbott took the reins has been absolutely shocking. I mean, this man's an imbecile, and he's a very dangerous imbecile. But, I mean, it's the same everywhere. Look what's going on in Canada. I mean, it's the same everywhere. The whole Western world, I think, is it's beginning to implode because the leaders are getting scared. They're realizing that the people are waking up to the fact that they're being scammed. So they're just bringing out everything that they can to try to kickstart World War III, to try to kickstart the fear, get people as involved as they can in hating everybody else. And that's about the only defense they've got left, I think.
I think if anybody really wants to know why this is all happening and why is Israel doing all of this, all you have to do is go back to the work of Theodor Herzl. And go back and look at his book, Der Judenstaat, from 1896. And the whole plan, what they wanted from that moment, and what the ultimate goal is. So this is not fiction, folks. And again, for anybody to say, oh, Mel, you and Max are anti-Semites, I will not apologize anymore for talking about this. This has nothing to do with being anti-Semitic. This is about being anti-Zionist. And let me ask you a question, Max, that I think the mainstream media, not surprisingly, doesn't ask anybody. If ISIS is marching and beheading all over the place in the Middle East, how come they haven't posed a threat to their biggest enemy, Israel? What is Israel doing right that is shielding them from ISIS?
Exactly. That's what I keep saying to people. I mean, these guys are stormtrooping across the Middle East and doing all of this bad stuff. They're going into Muslim countries and killing Muslims, and yet they're supposed to be a Muslim movement. Israel's right next door. Israel's right there next to Jordan. It's right there. Why haven't they marched into Israel? Because they're run by Israel. That's why. I mean, it's so obvious, and it should be obvious. And even the word anti-Semitic, I mean, this is a Zionist invention. I recommend that people go and watch a film called Defamation. Actually, it's a film made by a Jewish scholar who wanted to know what anti-Semitism was because he was an Israeli and he'd never experienced anti-Semitism. And he made a film called Defamation, which literally shows...
Is that the one with Abe Foxman and all those people?
Yeah, and it literally shows how the Israeli people are programmed to believe that the world hates them, okay, which immediately puts them on the defensive. I mean, everything Israel does is defensive, but it attacks everybody around it in self-defense, it claims.
The victim mentality throughout.
The victim mentality, and it gets programmed into these people right from the word go. And it's very important that people go and look at that and see the mentality of these people. But yeah, look, these organizations, they're a threat to Israel, they're a threat to everything, and yet they attack everybody but Israel. And that should be very telling to people. And look, I've done talks about this sort of stuff recently, and I've actually had Jewish people come up to me after my talks and thank me for speaking the truth about Israel because one guy said to me, look, I'm a Semitic Jew. My family lived there in peace for thousands of years with the Muslims until the Europeans came down and destroyed the whole place and turned it into a country and started making war against their neighbors. And the whole term anti-Semitism is a Zionist invention. And the Semites are Middle Eastern people. Palestinians are Semites. Jesus was a Palestinian. You know, he was a Palestinian from Galilee. Well, these are Semitic races. All of the Middle Eastern races are Semitic races. And Israel is a race of white people from Europe who attacks all the Semitic races around them and calls them anti-Semitic. It's ridiculous. I mean, the people who run Israel, most of them aren't actually Semites, you know. There's about 8% of the population of Israel, the Jewish population of Israel, are Semites. The rest of them are Western Europeans. And the rest of them, the main population in Israel, are actually Palestinians.
And they're the Semites.
And they're the Semites. Exactly. So it's ridiculous. And there'll never be peace in the region until Israel acknowledges Palestine's right to exist. See, everything they say is backwards. They say that they have to keep attacking Palestine because Palestine won't acknowledge Israel's right to exist. But it's Israel that won't acknowledge Palestine's right to exist. And the parameters that they give them for Palestinians to recognize Israel's right to exist, and they have to recognize Israel's right to have stolen their country and dispossessed them of their homeland. That's a big order. That's a tall order to ask anyone to acknowledge. You know, but the problem is that Israel existed there for thousands of years within Palestine. It was always the Holy Land of Israel, and they lived in peace. They babysitted each other's kids as recently as 1946. You know, and then the Europeans came, and it's created this whole mess, which has turned into what we're seeing now. The whole destabilization of the Middle East, this whole war in Iraq through Syria, Libya, the whole thing has been part of the Greater Israel Project. It has been the whole time.
We give Israel about $3 billion every year in aid, military aid and so on. I really wonder, Max, if they really want peace. Because if they ever had peace and there are two states living in harmony with each other, they know we won't be sending them that much money. But Israel's defense budget is around $15 billion. Where's the rest coming from?
Yeah, well, Israel doesn't want peace. It does not want peace. It never has wanted peace. It wants the Arab races gone. That's what it wants. And it's going to continue manufacturing these Islamic threats until it's wiped out all of these races. And all of these Islamic threats have been manufactured by Israel. Even the radicalization of Islam that happened was due to what happened in Afghanistan with the war with the Mujahideen and the whole war with Russia. This was all because of the West. They brought in these books and they taught them that the Russians were attacking their faith, and they radicalized certain sections of Islam through there. The first books on radical Islam were printed in the United States. So the whole thing's been introduced, you know, and it's a scam. The whole thing's a scam. Really, when you look at it, if you want to get religious about things, I mean, Islam and Christianity are very, very close together. These people should be allies, if anything. And it's Judaism, which is a supremacist system, which has caused all of the problems, you know. And, you know, and I don't agree with any religion. I'm just not religiously minded. But you've got to look at this and see how it's all being manipulated. You've got to ask yourself, qui bono, in all of these situations, you've got to ask yourself who benefits. And you've got to step back and look at the whole thing on the global stage. people are too concentrating on little factions, and they don't think they're related, but they all are. The whole world is related. That's something I really noticed through traveling. It's like it's one big family. The world is not that big at all. It's one big global village, really. Just people the same everywhere. They might look a little different. They might speak different languages, but it's all one big family, really. We're all just brothers and sisters, and we're being horribly manipulated by psychopaths in control of this world. And, you know, we need to pay attention to it, Mel. We've got to start respecting each other so we can stand up and do something about this. I mean, ultimately, it's got to come down to that. It's got to come down to the people standing up and fixing the problem. The governments aren't going to do it. And if we could respect each other enough to simply stand up and say, hey, we see you now. We see what you're doing, and we're not going to do it anymore. Then they wouldn't have a choice. They'd have to stop, you know. But you need a huge groundswell of public to do this, you know. And this is why people have to respect each other. This is what I've been trying to show to people in my talks is what they really are, what you really are, and how beautiful you are, all of you, you know, and why it's so easy to respect other people, why it's so easy to fix this problem if we really step back and just, you know, took five and just took a deep breath and realized who we are and just respected each other, the whole world could change, you know. But everyone wants the golden bullet. Everyone wants the silver bullet. Everyone wants the master key that's going to get us out of this problem. Everyone wants the new system. Now, give me the new system that we can step out of and step into this new system. But they don't realize that if we haven't changed our heart space, we don't start acting in respect and really know who we are, then we're just going to end up back where we are. And if we start operating from those parameters and really know who we are and operate from respect, then we don't need to create a new system. The new system will create itself around our new moral understandings, around our new consciousness, you know. That's the way we have to do it, but it's got to start with us. It's got to start at home, and we have to all be prepared to step into our role and act and get out there and get involved in our societies, you know.
You know, I always say that the biggest conspiracy of all is the secret to our own potential. I think the biggest problem is that most people are always expecting someone else to get things done. Sometimes it's not because they're lazy, but because they don't think they're capable. If they only knew, most people who are listening to us, if you only knew that most change in the world started with the action of one. Look at Gandhi. Did he strike you as a very strong and powerful person? No, but his actions were. We're all born with the same possibility of greatness. We just need to blow the smoke that's in front of our faces.
Exactly. You know, that's the problem. People think that great people do great things. They don't realize that they're capable of doing great things. You know, anything that's ever happened on this planet, even this control grid, ultimately came about because of the idea of one person had this idea and other people went along with the idea. You know, you can all have ideas. We just don't believe we're capable of them. We all believe we're little people. You know, I'm just a little person and one person can't do anything. They don't realize that all change ultimately came from the mind of one person. And that we're all born with, you know, infinite potential, and we're all born with an equal amount of potential. You know, we might have physical handicaps where we're not born equal in that respect. And, you know, people aren't born equal because they do have different physical things which may prevent them from being equal. But mentally, we are. We are equal. We are all capable of having that idea, that one idea, if we only believe in ourselves. It isn't that great deeds are done by great people. It's just that little people don't believe that they are capable of great things, but they are.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was looking at our forum today, and somebody posted something interesting. I've heard about this before, but not to this extent, of so many of our representatives, senators, and government officials. And I don't mean to be bashing Israel all, you know, throughout the show, but the dual citizenship that they'll have. Do you find it interesting that if you're an elected politician that you represent not only the United States, but another country, shouldn't that be against the law?
Well, it is, I believe. It is against the law, but they do it anyway. And what people need to understand is that they have a higher allegiance. If they're a senator in your country and they're also dual citizenship with Israel, they have a higher allegiance. Their allegiance is to Israel. There's actually been one senator, I think from Colorado or someone, I might have that wrong, but there was a senator recently speaking out saying we need to remove all Jewish influence from our political system. The people in our political systems need to be Americans. We do not want anyone with dual citizenship in control of our governments, in control of our banking system, in control of anything to do with our country. When it needs to be Americans. And that's true. It does. Because it's the dual citizenship that has allowed a lot of this to happen. And you know, people say, oh, you're anti-Semitic, you're speaking out against the Jews. Well, I'm not. I'm just, I mean, you look at these organizations and they're all Jews. What do you say? Is that anti-Semitic, just admitting the truth that all of these positions, in really high up positions in the banking systems, in the government systems, they're all Jews? What are they doing there? You know, if they're supporting America, then why are they dual citizens? You know, you've really got to look at this. I mean, this is a hugely controversial issue, and it's a hugely important issue. But there's been a lot. I mean, the relationships are breaking down a bit. The relationship between the United States and Israel is breaking down because of these latest incursions. I mean, Israel really overstepped the mark with what it just did in Gaza. And, Gaza is still suffering from that. I was actually supposed to be in Gaza right now, but, circumstances prevented me from being there. Quite amazing, really, the synchronicity in my life, just to shift topics a little bit, because I was supposed to go into Gaza on the 15th. I was supposed to enter Gaza Strip. I actually came down with meningitis on the 14th and was prevented from leaving. Had I arrived there, I mean, I would have arrived there with meningitis, which would have been terrible. But a week ago, a few days ago, there was an attack on the Sinai, and 33 people were killed at the Al-Arish checkpoint. And President Al-Sisi has blamed Hamas, which, of course, it wasn't Hamas. There's no way it was Hamas. And he's locked down the Sinai, put it on curfew, locked it down as a state of emergency for 3 months and closed Rafah border indefinitely. So had I gone to Gaza, I'd be stuck in there indefinitely. The borders have now been closed indefinitely. Right when these people need aid, they need foreign aid to get there, it's imperative that aid gets to Gaza Strip after what they've just been through. But all of these circumstances just happened to lock down Gaza Strip, and Spirit sort of kept me out of there. I mean, meningitis is a hell of a way to do it.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how my life works in that way, the synchronicity that prevented me from going there. And the ticket's paid for. I've got the ticket there on hold. Someone sponsored my trip over there, and I've got the ticket all there ready to go. I can fly to Cairo tomorrow if I want to, and I've got a return flight to Cairo to be able to get there, but I can't get across the Sinai, and even if I do get across the Sinai, I can't get through Rafah border.
Is it because of the military dictatorship in Egypt now?
Yeah, Al-Sisi. He's a bit of a case. He's done a lot of damage to the whole area. He's done a lot of damage to the Sinai region, a lot of damage to the Rafah area. Uprooted lots of trees, killed lots of people, destroyed lots of homes, closed the border. So it's quite amazing, really. But Gaza's the one that suffers through all of this, and it's really sad. I mean, I've been trying to get into Gaza for the last 3-4 months, and it's just becoming almost impossible.
Let me just say that this conversation we're having about what you said about Colorado, even if, for example, all these representatives and senators and high government officials, even if they were dual citizens of Saudi Arabia or Norway or Austria or what have you, I would say the same thing. You should renounce to that citizenship if you want to be an elected official here, because otherwise you're always going to be putting another country before us. You know, look at this. 7% of the U.S. Congress, 29 representatives, that's 7% of the U.S. Congress. 12 senators, that's 12% of the Senate. And, you know, these numbers may sound low to many people, but all it takes is one vote to push legislation either way. And then a plethora of high-ranking government officials, 44 of them, Kissinger, Wolfowitz, Michael Chertoff, and many others. And look, if you're a Muslim in Saudi Arabia or any other Muslim, again, it would be the same. And isn't this the same also? Don't we have a law here that people are not allowed to be knighted, no titles? That's part of our constitution. Isn't it more or less the same?
Well, yeah, exactly. And you've got people even being knighted. I mean, you've got Mayor Giuliani, who was knighted by the Queen. What are people knighted for? You know, for service to the British Empire. So he was knighted after 9/11 for service to the British Empire. What does that tell people? Because he acted like such a hero in saving people? Who did he save? What did he do that was so heroic on 9/11 that would have granted him a knighthood? You know, you really got to look at this. You know, who's the crown? Who's the British crown? Well, it's this same Hebrew line that goes way back to Egypt. You know, it's all connected to the European royal family. It's the same people. It's all the same people. You know, so it's this one oligarch that runs the planet. And people need to pay attention to those sorts of things. But yeah, any dual citizen in any country should not be sitting on any board of directors for anything to do with government or banking or anything like that. I mean, you can't have senators that have national, you know, have a different nationality, belong to a different country or dual citizenship. Where does their allegiance lie? How do you know that their allegiance doesn't lie with their other country more than your country? You know, and would Israel allow people with dual citizenship to go in there and become senators in their country? You know, of course they wouldn't. Would any country allow this? Of course not. Why does America allow it? That's the question. People need to step back and look at this. And is this being anti-Semitic? Well, no, it's not. You've just got to look at what's going on in the United States. Look at the amount of wars you guys are involved in and the amount of instability that's happened around the globe because of America's involvement with Israel. And it shows. It's just right there for all to see. And I think it's all coming to the fore now. People are not afraid to talk about this anymore. You know, people who weren't speaking out about it now are seeing that there's a need to do so. That's why these senators are speaking out saying, look, we need to get rid of these dual citizens. People are starting to smell the coffee and they're starting to smell that there's a rat in the room, you know. And it's going to change. I think it has to change. I don't think they're going to succeed in what they're doing. They're really, really pushing. They're really trying to kickstart World War III. And they're really trying to kickstart, you know, locking down everyone. To a large degree, they are. I mean, a lot of people are buying into it. There's a huge amount of Muslim hatred in this country. But I still don't think they're going to win. I think it's all going to implode. It's just going to fall apart because there's too many people that are waking up because of their actions. You know, more and more people are waking up. The more they lock people down, the more people wake up. And that's the way it's going to be.
Well, the reason why I bring this up is the titles and the knighting and all that is because a lot of the people that I mentioned are not even Jewish, but they have been granted Israeli citizenship, and you wonder why. So that's why I brought, I was looking for the Constitution, and I found that we have Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 of the U.S. Constitution. Not only forbids the United States from granting titles of nobility, but restricts members of the government from receiving gifts from their foreign states without the consent of the U.S. Congress. They can't accept titles of any kind, whatever, from any king, prince, or foreign state. Isn't this, again, similar to being granted citizenship to another country? You want citizenship to another country? Fine, but quit politics and open your seat to someone who is not.
Exactly, exactly. That's what they need. You know, you can't belong to, you can't be a foreign national. You can't have foreign nationals sitting in your government because you don't know where their allegiances lie. I mean, that's pretty damn simple, and people need to wake up and smell the coffee.
You mentioned a global lockdown. Is this what we're seeing? More and more people are waking up. That's why we see the rise of the police state to the extreme we're seeing at Mike's Max.
Well, yeah, and there's many ways to go about this global lockdown. I mean, you look at the Ebola scare, and people are becoming scared to travel. They're becoming scared to leave their own country, you know, and this is all part of it. You know, I mean, I don't buy into the whole Ebola scam, but, you know, if you leave the country, well, if you get a cold while you're away, there's a good chance you're going to come back and spend a couple of months in quarantine at the airport, you know. So people are not really wanting to travel because they don't want to go through that sort of stuff. Plus, a lot of them are just scared they're going to get Ebola. So there's various ways of locking down communities, and this is one of the mechanisms that they're using.
I hear many people, and by the way, I believe in having, you know, restricted borders in the United States, and, you know, we issue a lot of visas to people, and we should do it legally. At the same time, I hear people saying, we need to block the border. We need to erect walls all over the border. People don't know that just like we try to prevent people from coming in, having those, do we remember Berlin? Do we remember the wall? Are people not thinking that we can actually be prevented from leaving our own country in case of emergency?
Exactly, exactly. It's about all this stuff. People are asking for their own slavery, you know, because they want us to, they want the government to protect us, you know. But it's all theater. It's all theater for the masses, you know. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, I mean, a world without borders would be so much better, but it's not going to happen while we've got this, this economic model. While we've got all our countries sort of set up as corporations, that's not going to happen. That's what it's really all about. The whole corporate system. That's what they're making here. That's what they're turning the world into, one big global corporation. But yeah, all of these things that are put there to protect us are actually just part of the prison. That's all it is. And you don't want a wall around your country. You don't want your borders that secure. What you want is an honest government. and there wouldn't be problems. You know, if you had an honest government that worked with the honest government in the country next door, you wouldn't have people crossing your borders, would you? Because everything would be above board, everything would be normal, everybody would be looked after and well off, you know, if you had a little bit of honesty in government. Now, I often say that all the problems that we face in the world today are due to legislation that's put in place by government. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter whether it's border crossings, doesn't matter whether it's war, pollution, homelessness, any of it. There's legislation which allows these situations to happen. And that happens because the people of the country don't believe they have any power to control their government, but they do. But they only have that power if they unite as one people, which only happens if they respect themselves and respect the people around them. So that's why it always comes back to that for me. But, you know, we're getting to the stage where we're being forced to step into our power. We have to. Because otherwise we're going to lose this planet. We're going to be lost in a path of war and destruction that's just going to keep going until we choose to stand up and say enough is enough. You know, we've got to have respect, Mel. We won't do it unless we have a strong community. You know, a strong communal response can stop any government action, any legislation, anything they want to do. If you've got a strong, empowered community that's strong, eloquent, respectful, non-violent, you don't need violence. All you need is the strength of numbers. All you need is to stand up and not back down. Don't allow yourself to be bamboozled by rhetoric, you know, and just speak your mind and stand in your truth, and they have nowhere to go. They'll back down, because if they don't back down, they expose themselves as the psychopaths that they are. And psychopaths, they're like cockroaches, mate. You shine a light on them and they run into the darkness. They run away and hide. So, you know, we just need to shine that light on them in the right way. But we need the strength of community to do it properly. And really, you don't need to have a lot of people standing behind you. All you need is someone who can stand up eloquently and say this, and so that the community hears it. And they go, oh, yeah, what he said, that's right. And therefore, the problem is the media. I mean, the media is as complicit as anybody in all these war crimes that are going on. It's how to get this message onto the mainstream, into a place where the vast majority of people can hear it. Because when you get out there and you actually start speaking the truth, it resonates with people, and they start thinking a little differently, and they start looking between the lines a little bit. It's just getting that platform to be able to get the message out to them. It's a difficult part.
Well, I don't think there's before. Maybe we saw a line of demarcation between the media and the government, but right now I really don't see a difference. To me, it's just the propaganda machine. It's the mediaopoly. They're all, we know who owns the media, and we know who, I mean, just, I hate to bring this up again, but I'm glad I'm speaking with Max Egan. The Federal Reserve, same thing. They control the money. They cannot. You see people saying, oh, we need to audit the Fed. No, we don't need to audit the Fed. There's nothing that's going to be accomplished out of that. So you audit the Fed, so you go home and nothing happens. We need to abolish the Fed. They are the ones who control the money. They are the ones who control the government. They are the ones who are in control of the world, in my opinion.
Exactly. The banking system is the catalyst. The banking system, the money is the glue that holds the whole system together. The money system is the head of the snake, and that is absolutely what needs to be addressed. You know, we've got to stop the private issuance of currency. That is the root cause of the whole problem. And this economic model, you know, based on permanent growth and the private issuance of currency, which puts everybody in a state of permanent death, permanent debt, I mean, this situation can only result in rendering this planet into a state where it's incapable of supporting human life. You know, if we're going to continue supporting a model based on permanent economic growth, then we will eventually turn every single resource on this planet into rubbish. Because that's all we do. We harvest resources from the earth, we turn it into stuff that breaks quickly so we can make it again, and we put it on a rubbish tip. So basically we're turning the whole world into a rubbish tip in order to support an economic model based on permanent growth. This system is designed to dispossess humankind and destroy this planet's ability to support human life. That's its only purpose. So we've got to look at where it's going and where it comes from. And we've really got to pause and take stock of this. Why are we supporting a system which is so intent on discarding humanity? We'll allow people to become homeless and go out on the street and starve because they haven't balanced the books. I mean, this is ridiculous. We really need to look at this situation. You know, the economic model is fiction. It's just numbers on a screen. It's not real. And humanity is the one that's suffering because of this economic model. We live in a planet of abundance. This is a beautiful planet that could support far more people than it's got the reason we're having people in states of hardship and we're having so much homelessness and starvation is simply and purely because of the economic model. So we absolutely have to address that. It's the head of the snake. It's the most important problem that we face on the planet.
And believe me, I prefer conscious capitalism before I go to communism. But that word conscious is the important one. But how does a permanent growth system be sustainable when we live on a planet with limited resources? And here we are. We always ridicule the indigenous people, the aboriginals. But they were here thousands of years before, living in harmony with the planet. Don't we need to learn from them and apply those lessons?
Oh, absolutely, man. We do. I mean, we could have societies that work. We could have, societies look kind of like what we've got with these cities and this infrastructure we've got, but we could have it so that it actually works. It's beneficial. It lasts. We could make cars to last. We could make cars that don't pollute. You know, we could do everything differently if we weren't so intent on supporting a model based on permanent growth. You can't have permanent growth. It's ridiculous. And people are so concerned about the state of the economy. And I just say, look, the economy's fiction. I don't give a damn about the economy. Forget the economy. You know, but we're taught that the economy is everything. Everything has an economic value. Even time is money. Everything is about money. That's what it's all about. That's what wealth is. It's having money. You know, to me, wealth is health. Wealth is the quality of your relationships with people, the quality of the environment that you live in, and the health of you and your friends and your family, your mental health and your physical health. This is wealth. You know, money, it's not wealth. That's just stuff that's put there to provide a barrier between you and the abundance of the earth. You can't have that which is right there in front of you, which grows for free. You need to collect this paper in order to go and buy it off someone. It's a joke, you know. We've got to stop supporting this economic system. We've got to start supporting humanity. Looking at things from a human perspective rather than an economic perspective. Stop putting an economic value on everything because it's fiction. But it's really interesting. It's a really interesting program, you know. Once you start introducing economics over the minds of people and start introducing them to a system of trading using coins and money and stuff, it's a really interesting program, and it's very difficult to get people to break out of this program. It's an amazing thing. I've been told that it's based on Kabbalistic principles. I'd like to look into it a little bit further because it's almost like a mental parasite or something. It's like a program that gets into your mind. I mean, you got all these villages, these tribal villages that never seen money before and get along fine.
That's right.
And then the West comes along and introduces a trading system, and suddenly they don't know how to live without it. So what happened? What happened to shift that mind space? Why can't they go back to the way they were once money has been introduced? It's a very, very interesting, interesting thing to look at.
You know, I spoke to a medical doctor the other day on my other radio program, and Dr. J.E. Williams, and he spent time with a Peruvian indigenous tribe in the Andes. He spent years with them. He eventually became a shaman by the tribe. So now he's bringing back all that knowledge to his practice and to his city and so on. But at one point he took the Peruvian shaman from the mountains for the first time to the city of Lima. For the first time, he made it to the city. The things that he learned, he was walking, everybody was stopping and trying to see this man coming from the mountains. But he said, I don't understand why people drive. We have legs. I'm in my 50s or 60s, and if I have to travel 9 miles, I have my legs. And I don't understand all these buildings. People live vertically and not horizontally with the planet. So I thought that was pretty powerful. Also, I just came back from the Yucatan Peninsula a few months ago and driving towards a Mayan city. And a lot of the tourists were making comments saying, look, you know, poor people, look at them. They don't have anything. But I said to them, look at their faces. They're all smiling. They don't need more than what they have. Do you have a smile on your face just like they do? That puts things in perspective, Max.
Oh, it does. It does. You know, they're very, very real people. All of the tribal people that you meet in those cultures are very real. And they can't understand what happened to us, where we went wrong, why we do the things that we do. It's even like have you heard of Wetiko, the book?
I interviewed him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, that's an interesting concept, you know, the concept of this parasite that makes us do things that we know are bad for us, but we do them anyway.
He's Jewish, and he tells it like it is.
Yeah, yeah. And you meet these cultures and they're beautiful people and they're happy. They've got virtually nothing, but they're happy. And they will always invite you in to their houses and share what little they have with you. It's the same in the Middle East. You can't walk into a house, into an Arab house, without them bringing out a tray of food. They feed their guests. And if you're, when I was in Gaza, walking down the street in Palestine, I'd stop and talk to a shopkeeper. And if I was talking to them for longer than 30 seconds, he'd be waving for someone inside to bring out a tray of food and a tray of tea, and he'd bring out chairs, and we'd sit down on the sidewalk, and we'd have a little powwow, and we'd share bread together, and we'd share tea together. And this is every single person that you meet. You know, very, very courteous, very polite people. And it's the same with these shamanistic traditions, it's the same with these tribal cultures. Everywhere you go, they always invite you in to share with you. They're always very interested in what you have to say, and they're always very interested in your opinion of them. And they're always very fascinated in why the hell the West does what we do. Like, what happened to you guys? How did you get so disconnected? You know? It's an amazing experience, really. I recommend everybody go down and meet some of these cultures. They're amazing cultures. I love South America. I reckon it's a wonderful place. Unfortunately, we're destroying it the way we have everywhere else, but, it's still got a lot going for it. There's a lot of, family traditions and things there in the third world. This is why they're shifting the wealth around the planet at the moment, actually, because they've disconnected the Western world so much. Look, we've lost a lot of our family traditions and our family connections. You know, we get our old folks, we put them in old folks' home. You go to the Arab world, the reverence they have for their elderly people is incredible. They honor these people. They dote on their elderly people. It's the shame in the shamanistic cultures. They literally dote on these people. They respect them so much. And they still have very, very strong family values. But in the West, we're taught that, no, you throw your kids out of home, as soon as they're old enough to work, they got to make their own way in the world, become debt slaves like you are. When your folks are too much in the way, you put them in an old folks home, get rid of them. It's all about you and your stuff and the material possessions that you've gained and the little empire that you've created for yourself, because I am my stuff. You know, that's what's kind of Western mentality. And so what they do is now that they've got the Western world so dependent upon this lifestyle and so programmed, I mean, you can reduce the Western world now to the state of the first world. I mean, the first world, you can reduce it to the state of the fourth world. And these people will go and work the mines and go fight the wars and do whatever you want them to do because they firmly believe the economic model's real and they have to collect this paper to support their family. And they won't support their other family members. They'll get discarded by their family members. If they're not a good worker or whatever, the parents will kick their son out or whatever. You know, there's none of this family respect and community that we used to have that is still in the third world. So what they do now is they shift all the wealth into the third world. They start giving them iPhones and computers and laptops and all the stuff that we've got. And over a couple of generations, that will disconnect these family units, and then they've got them locked into the economic model as well. And that's what they're doing. So that's why when you go to places like Peru, they've got, you know, TVs everywhere, and it's all about all the flashy stuff that the West has got. And all these people want it. They think, oh, gee, this is pretty good. But they don't see the price that we've paid for it, which is the loss of ourselves, the loss of our consciousness, the loss of our connection to the earth, the loss of our family units, the loss of who we are, the loss of our humanity is what we've paid for all this stuff. And they don't see that. They only see what the television tells them. So they gradually shift it into the third world, and they shift the wealth all around the planet, and that's how they dispossess people. And that's what they're in the process of doing in South America at the moment.
I think this is all a manufactured belief, Max. I remember in the mid-90s, I spent time in Southeast Asia, you know, Singapore, Malaysia, and so on. And at one point, I decided to go to Indonesia. And people said, you be very careful. That's a Muslim country. You're not used to that, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of dangerous. And I decided to go anyway. So I went there, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, people were so nice to me. And I learned a lesson when I was in Indonesia. They said to me, you in the West say, treat people the way you want to be treated. Here we say, treat others the way they want to be treated. So learn more about me. Sit down. Have a cup of tea. Let's learn from each other. So this manufactured belief, and again, let me pick now on the Bible Belt in the United States. And I know I have a lot of listeners from that area. No offense to you. But you defend so much all these eternal wars that we have. Why is that, Max? Why is that the Christian extreme here in the United States has to support all of this all the time? If Jews don't even acknowledge the existence of the Jesus being the Messiah? Why do the Christians have to support Israel so much?
Well, because it says in the Bible that, you know, Israel is God's chosen people and it's God's chosen land and we all must support Israel. It's part of the program, you know, and really that the Christians are just being used as cannon fodder. I mean, that's what Israel is using to fight all their wars for them, to destroy the Muslim world. And then, like I said, once they've destroyed the Muslim world, then they'll do it with the Christians. I mean, they're doing it already economically. Look what they're doing to America. Look at the state of the Western world now, all of our countries. There's so much hardship going on in all of our countries economically. And most of this is because of the Fed and the Reserve and the money system and all the stuff, which is all run by Israel. So there's different ways of doing things, you know, different ways of doing it in different countries. But the Christians support Israel so much because it says so in the book. It says that you have to support Israel. Of course, the book was written by the Hebrews. So it's kind of a program that was written for them. You know, the Bible, the Christian Bible is actually taught as a history book in Israel. When you go to school in Israel, they teach you the Christian Bible as a history book because it's the only place in the world where Jewish history actually exists. It's the only book you can find any type of Jewish history because there is no Jewish history because there is no actual Jewish race. The Jewish race is an invention. You can look at a book called The Invention of the Jewish People by Jewish scholar Shlomo Sand, who outlines it perfectly, that there is no Jewish race. It's a religion. Okay, the whole concept of it being a race has been created specifically to, you know, create the situation that we've got now. You know, so you've really got to look at this. But the Christians will continue to support it because it says so in the book. And many of them are so brainwashed that they just go along with it. I mean, a lot of the Christians, I mean, these aren't Christians anyway. There's very few real Christians in the world who actually follow the teachings of Christ. And it's the same in Israel as well. I mean, there's very few Jews who actually believe in Judaism. There's very few Jews who actually believe in God. And yet they do believe God gave them Israel, which is an interesting concept. But, you know, the Christians, I don't know, they're just being led down the garden path. But again, I think a lot of it is because of the influence in your political systems, in your education systems. I mean, there's a huge Israeli influence in America that controls all of what the people are fed, controls the media, controls the mindset of the people. And I think that's a lot of it. I think if people really knew the truth about what Israel was, about how it was founded, about what its goals are, about what it's actually done to the Palestinian people, I don't think that the Christians would support it at all. You know, it's just a program that they're running, Mel.
I understand that the Internet is there for a reason. I don't think they really suspected that it would wake people up the way it is. Because, you know, misinformation and disinformation could be very prevalent on the Internet. At the same time, do you think the Internet is the last bastion of truth for us?
In many ways, it is. It's our saving grace at the moment. It's we really, really need it to stay open because there are people out there that are speaking the truth. There's certainly a lot of disinformation on the Internet, but there are people that are speaking the truth as well. And when people hear the truth, it resonates with them. I think that's the important thing. You know, there's certain wild cards. I mean, they thought that it would work to control people. But there's certain things they can't predict that just happen. Like me, they can't predict someone like me is just going to come out and say what I say without any fear of repercussion. They can't predict someone like Ken O'Keefe's going to do what he does. They can't predict, you know, people like you are going to do what you do. There's just wild cards that come out that they can't control. And they can't control what we say. And very often, you know, unless we push the envelope and start calling for the death of someone or start calling for civil war or something like that, I mean, I've never called for anyone's assassination. I've never called for any wars. I've never called for anything like that. If I did, they could probably get me for something. But with what I've said now and all the things that I do say and all the things that you say, you're kind of treading that knife edge. You're walking that line and you're speaking the truth and you're saying things that are very, very in your face. But you're not really threatening them, so they can't really arrest you for anything. And if they get you for what you're saying now, then you're going to go to court and you're going to stand up in front of the nation and you're going to prove everything you've said to be true. So it's the last thing they want. And that's why I get away with what I do, I think, because I tread that line. And if they want to charge me with something, hey, I'm fine. Let's go to court because I can prove everything that I say. And that's the last thing they want. That would scare the hell out of them. And again, if they were to just shut me down, then it's going to attract attention to people. That's why I maybe infect people with things like meningitis and just let them die quietly on their own. I really wonder where that came from, that meningitis. I mean, the timing of it as well was incredible because I actually postponed my trip to Gaza for a completely unrelated reason because I was concerned about security crossing the Sinai. I only postponed it for 1 week. And had I not postponed it for 1 week, I would have been on a plane that day and I would have been melting down with meningitis as I arrived in Gaza. Mm. So I would have taken meningitis to Gaza. I would have had no treatment there for it. I probably would have died in Gaza, given the whole place meningitis, and that would have been the end of Max Egan. And for me to get that disease just as I'm supposed to leave, and for me to have cancelled or postponed completely intuitively for a completely different, unrelated reason, I don't know, maybe I'm just reading too much into things, but I'm really sus on that whole thing.
You always wonder. I got meningitis years ago after, you know, a couple of days after leaving on a plane, and then years later I got pericarditis. I could have died as well. So you never know. So I'm glad that whatever happened happened the way it did, because you might be able to go back to Gaza and do what you have to do. But in the past, we probably would have been considered as subversive, because we don't toy the party line. But now, with all these new laws, they can change it around and say, no, you are an enemy combatant living in the United States or Australia.
Yeah, they can. That's the thing. They're changing the laws so much. So you've got to really, really be careful what you're saying now. But you know, still, if you're just speaking the truth and speaking from your heart, and I mean, I'm a pacifist. I'm a humanitarian. Everything I do is about humanity. I don't want to overthrow the government. I just want accountability in government. I just want some honesty. And if they're not being honest, I'm prepared to tell them that they're not being honest. I'm prepared to say it to their face. I'm not scared of these people. I won't pull any punches. I won't support a government that's involved in organized crime, and I can prove they are involved in organized crime. Just look at the bloody war in Iraq. Look at everything that they're doing. Look at Syria. Look at everything that this government has done. Yeah, I mean, you can just look at it and call a spade, and there's not much they can do about it. It's when you start calling for revolution, or when you start calling for assassinations, or you start calling for all this sort of stuff, which I don't want. I don't want any of that. I just want honesty and accountability. I want to just be able to look at this person, which is just another man. Tony Abbott is just a man. He's no better than me. He's no more important than me. He's not even a special. He's just a man with a suit who's put himself into a high position. And he's a sociopathic little liar, and I have no problem telling him that. So if they want to charge me for what I say, hey, let's boogie. I'm quite happy to say everything that I say as publicly as possible, and let's see if you can prove me wrong. And that's my attitude towards them all. I will not back down to these people. You know, I think I'm here for a purpose. I think we all are. We're here to gain our strength. We're here to suddenly realize who we are. This is the time the human race woke up to itself and stood up and made a difference. And I think that everybody here who is awake or even partially awake or even interested in this information, this is what you're here to do. You're here to stand strong, stand tall, stand in love, and stand in respect, and stand up for your brothers and sisters around the planet, because we're all in this together. And all of the problems that we're facing in the world all come from Western governments. And the Western governments do this because Western people are so apathetic they won't stand up and do something about it, because they don't understand their own power. And that's all you have to do, is understand your own power. You don't need any violence. All you need to do is to stand up and say enough is enough and make a difference. Be prepared to make a difference, you know. Be prepared to be who you are. That's what this time in history is. And that's what people need to do. Just stand strong, stand tall, and stand proud in what you are. Stand proud in the art of your own life.
Those are great words. And your power comes from within, and not from someone with a title or a white robe or an expert. And we have to take our one and only break. But you know, Max, some people say, let's work hard to leave a better planet for our children. To that I say, no, let's work on leaving better humans for our planet. And when you see a planet like this, a living being that it is, and the damage those in quote-unquote control are doing, I don't see any difference between a metastatic cancer and the current system. But we're going to discuss so much more. I want to discuss open, direct, open source democracy with you when we come back, and the manufactured belief and reality that we all live in. But once again, how do people learn more about your work? Also, you have what is the circle, the new project that you're working on?
The Full Circle project. That's going to be launched in earnest next year. That's going to be a series of workshops that goes around the planet. I'm trying to get as many people involved as possible. I want to get some good speakers, people that I think stand out in the so-called truth movement or alternate media. And I want to be able to do a series of workshops that we take around and leave communities empowered with something they can take forward from that point. Not just come and have a speaking gig and, oh, aren't we great, you're all here to hear us talk. We come and offer you, like, not just a talk, but actually a workshop where you can get hands-on involved in changing your own community. That's what I want to do with the Full Circle Project.
folks.
Bring us full circle back to where we should be, Mel.
Absolutely. TheCrowHouse.com is your website. And when we come back, I know things are bad in the world. I know that. And a lot of times you hear, yes, Mel, Max, things are bad. But what can we really do about it? That's what I want to discuss when we come back. Practical applications of things that you can do starting from the ground up at a grassroots level. Because change, it's not going to happen from the top down. It's going to happen from you, starting with you. When we come back, this is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to Veritas. This is Mel Fabregas. And once again, I'm so glad to have Max Egan back with us here, because we can talk about so many topics. And before the break, I said that so many people say that we have to leave a better world for our children. And to that, I say we have to leave better humans for our world. But the question is, we know there's a lot of problems in the world, but people just do not want to stand up, get off their seats, and do something about it. I don't think that it's that they're lazy. Max, I think that they just don't believe that they can affect the change that's necessary.
It's true. They don't. I mean, a lot of them are scared, and a lot of them just don't understand the power that they have. They think they're little people. They don't understand the world is just made of people, and that all people have equal potential. Everybody. We have an incredible amount of potential. And you don't have to stand up and attack the system. All you have to do is speak your truth. Stand in your truth and be prepared to speak it. And ask questions. Ask questions in the right way. I mean, if you go up against some of these psychopaths and you simply ask them the right questions in a public enough manner, they're going to back down because you're exposing them for what they are. People just have to be prepared to stand up. Now, I believe one of the biggest things we need to do is break down the barriers in our community. I've been saying this to people for 7 years. You've got to get to know your neighbors. You've got to get to know people around you because you need the support of these people. And what prevents us from doing so is because we are scared of people. We're scared of ourselves. We're judging people by artificial parameters that are given to us by other people. And we don't understand ourselves. We don't understand the reality of ourselves. We don't understand the perfection of ourselves. That's something that I've been incorporating into all of my talks, this little rave about how perfect you are, because you literally, your body is a computer. It's a biological computer, and your DNA harvests a frequency, which is you. That's your consciousness. It's mapped to your DNA, and it's harvested from the field around you. It's an energetic universe. Your consciousness is not local to your body. It exists in the field. It's just one frequency of consciousness that is downloaded into that vessel. And no one can do that better than you. No one can experience the world from the perspective of Mel Fabregas except you. No one can be better at that than you. You are perfect at being Mel Fabregas, and being Mel Fabregas is what you came here to be, obviously, because that's who you are. So why would you consider yourself to be anything but perfect? And when you can see that in yourself, and you can see the perfection of your own perspective and how needed and valuable it is, then you can see that in everybody else, and suddenly all the barriers break down between you and people. All the judgment falls away. And then you can suddenly respect these people because you suddenly know the perfection of yourself and you can truly respect yourself. And if you don't respect other people, it's because you don't know this about yourself and you don't respect yourself, because if you did, respect for others would come by default. And that is an important understanding for people to have, because when you have that, it changes the way you view the world and it changes the way you interact with people. And that simple knowledge can change the world. Because suddenly all the barriers break down. Suddenly you've got a united community that respects each other. And suddenly we can see that humanity has infinite potential to go any direction that we want. The only thing that limits us is what we believe we can and cannot do. And these are parameters that are instilled into us by government, by an education system, by people who are not us. These are parameters that have been instilled into us that are not our own. We've never really looked at ourselves from a true perspective and from a valuable perspective and from our own perspective. We've looked at ourselves from other people's perspectives and parameters that have been provided for us. And so we've judged ourselves according to social or economic or appearance, you know, all sorts of things. We judge ourselves by all these parameters that are not our own. They're all fiction. We don't ever see our own perfection. To me, that's the key to the whole thing, Mel. When you can do that and you can see the perfection of yourself, suddenly the world changes, because you change the way you interact with the world. And if everybody did that, the world would have to change with us. And if you're prepared to stand in your strength and stand in your power and be eloquent and ask the right questions, then these people have nowhere to go. They just expose themselves. The more polite and the more eloquent and the more truthful you are, the more they expose themselves. And that's what we need, more of that, you know.
And that's a very good point, because these are all, in my opinion, things are dire for many people around the world. These are confrontational points, talking points. So confrontational talking points invariably sometimes will cause confrontation with those people who don't want to listen to the truth, because you're hurting their ego. You know, for example, I'm a recovering Catholic, for example, all my years in Catholic school and so on. When anybody would tell me something different, it was hard for me to swallow, because I've been programmed to say, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist, or you're just, you know, you're with the devil and so on. But sometimes you have an epiphany, and to me it was 9/11. After 9/11, I believed the whole story, hook, line and sinker, until I started doing my own research. And that's when I woke up. So in a way, I have to thank them for having perpetrated that, because if it hadn't been for that situation, I would probably still be, you know, watching Fox News. And I used to work in the belly of the beast in the corporate world, to the point that I almost bought a McDonald's about 15, 20 years ago. And now, look, McDonald's, it's going down. Why? Because people are waking up to what it is, the poisons that they eat. It's not even real food. So sometimes it takes that epiphany for you to wake up. I've never asked you, did you have that in your past?
Look, I had a little epiphany when I was 4, actually. That's when I woke up, when I was at the forest with my parents, and I asked them why we couldn't come and live in the forest. And they said, because we didn't own the land. And I said, what do you mean own the land? And they said, well, you got to own the land to live there. And I said, who owns the land? They said, the government. And I said, how did they get it? And Mum said, well, look, you'll understand when you get older. And I'm going, no, I don't think I'm ever going to understand this. And I went back to my yard, and I was walking around the yard with my teddy bear. I'm going, Teddy, the world's all messed up. These people think they can own land. I've been born onto the wrong planet. And that was my epiphany then when I was 4. I just thought, this is something's terribly, terribly wrong with the world.
Wow, because, 4.
Yeah. And, so I kind of just, I didn't understand anything. I didn't get along with my peers or anything. And then when I heard a Frank Zappa album when I was about 10, he explained to me, it was an album called We're Only In It For The Money. And I thought, it's not just me. There's other people who think this way as well. And then I became a musician and lived on the outside of society for my whole life. And I managed to find a way through it. But and I was an activist in as much as I was a researcher, because I wanted to know why the world was so messed up. But I wasn't really involved in trying to fix it. And not until 9/11 happened. Like so many people, when that happened, I thought, hang on, this is really serious. And all of this information I've been gathering all my life is actually very, very important. And I need to be putting more focus on this than on music. So I gave up the bands and started becoming an activist instead.
Frank Zappa, such a poet he was. But, you know, I'm thinking of Pink Floyd, not to become, you know, talking about music, but I think of Pink Floyd, The Wall, when it came out in 1979, I didn't get it. I didn't really get it. But every year that went by, I get it more and more and more. And I listen to that album now, and it's almost like what's happening today.
Oh, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant album. One of the most profound social statements ever put out. Another album by Roger Waters called Amused to
sure.
Death. If you haven't heard that, Mel,
oh, yes.
That album, when I heard that, I thought there's no way this guy's going to put out another album, because this is all that ever needed to be said. It's all on that album. Incredible social statements. I have so much respect for Roger Waters. He is a man with an incredible mind and an enormous heart. And he's been a huge influence on my life, and I love what he's done. Those sorts of milestones through music really help people wake up. You know, I mean, music is a big part of the problem. The music industry is a huge part of the problem. That's one of the reasons I left it, when I realized what I was swimming in, how I was distracting the youth and distracting the minds of people with irrelevant stuff while the world was being turned into a prison around them, which is a lot of what the music industry is designed to do. But then there's gems of gold in there as well. People like Roger Waters, people like Frank Zappa, who just saw things the way they were and really tried to alert the world. And it's a good thing that they did. And it was hugely grounding for me, finding music like that, because I didn't feel alone anymore. I found it hugely empowering to know that there were brilliant minds out there who actually thought the same way I did. I didn't think so badly about myself from that point, because I consider myself a misfit for most of my life. I couldn't understand why I didn't fit in, why I couldn't do the things other people did, why everything was so important to me. People used to say, oh, you're a rebel without a cause. You take everything too seriously. And I used to say, no, the world needs your attention. You know, when I was in school, I was telling my friends at school what the world was going to be like. And then I met one of my school friends about 4 or 5 years ago. I hadn't seen her for 30 years. And she came up to me and said, wow, everything you told us at school about what the world was going to be like in 30 years, it's now like it. How did you know? You know? And I just said, well, it's obvious. It's obvious. This is the way it's going, you know? And, you know, so it's been a great life, really. It's been a huge learning curve for me, but it's been a purposeful life. You know, for a long time I thought it wasn't, but really when I look back at it, the way I was able to live on the outside of society and express the art of my life as a musician and find a way through the matrix that way and have all the time I had for research by doing that, and which provided me all the tools that I need to do what I'm doing now, it's been a very fateful life. It's been a very, very destined life, I think. I think I'm walking the path exactly that I'm supposed to be walking.
Since we're talking about music, I think it's important to leverage this moment to discuss. I want to see what's your take on this. You probably heard about how in the late 1980s, you know, some people say this is just fiction, but I really, really think this is true. In the late 1980s, a bunch of the big music producers in Hollywood got together in Beverly Hills, some mansion, and some people from the new penitentiary industrial complex came along and said to them, hey, by the way, we need your assistance. Jails are now becoming publicly traded corporations. They're going to be privatized. And we need your help in order to fill them. So we need you to start putting music out there that's more, you know, that glamorizes crime and drugs and so on. And you remember when rap came out, it was kind of a, you know, it was not as hardcore as it became in the late 80s. Do you believe?
When rap came out, it was a social statement.
Yes.
It was people talking about their consciousness, and it became this gangster
rap.
Yeah, and it absolutely infiltrated. All these things are infiltrated. The music industry is a huge influence on people's minds and a huge influence on the social consciousness and the state of our social condition in our societies. Absolutely. All of these things have been co-opted. And even now you've got the black people, they're wearing these huge gold chains and padlocks and things. You know, they're glorifying their slavery traditions. You know what I'm saying? You got all these guys, what's this Snoop Dogg wearing these big chains around his neck and with padlocks on them and stuff, you know? This is glorifying.
Are you there, Max? You see, when we start talking about sensitive subjects, I expect us to lose lust. Okay, can you hear me, Max?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but your sound is completely low.
How about now?
Now.
That good?
That's good.
Okay.
You know, this is a kind of subject that's very, very difficult to discuss because a lot of people don't want to understand it. When you look at a chart from the 80s to the 90s, and you see the number of inmates in the United States. We have more inmates per capita in the United States than any other country in the world, including China. And then I spoke with Peter Crist. He was not Peter Crist from Kiss, but Peter Crist, a former police captain for, you know, over 30 years, and he's now one of the members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP. And he gave us all the compelling reasons why prohibition does not work. So when you have this prohibition plus the prison industrial complex together, you know exactly where we're going.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it's been really interesting to see the way it's been done, the way the music industry has been so involved in this as well, you know, and promoting this, all of this stuff. It is a huge influence on society. And like I said, the way they're embracing slavery by all these chains they're putting on black people and stuff now, you know, it's all about money, you know, money. And when you've got money, you buy chains. You know, it's bizarre, isn't it? It really is.
When you have money, you buy chains and you go in debt. Look at Mike Tyson. How many millions of dollars did he win? And now he doesn't have a penny to rob.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
So, manufactured reality. What is the real purpose of our manufactured reality? Of course, this is all the cultural editors perpetrating this crime against humanity.
Well, it's all distraction, Mel. It's to lead us into this slavery system is what it's about. Slavery depopulation. That's what it's about. I mean, depopulation takes many forms. And a lot of it is social conditioning, the impoverishment of people. This is depopulation. You know, all of these things are making people homeless, you know, enslaving people to an economic model. This is all about depopulation, the whole thing, discarding humanity more and more along the way. That's where we're going. That's what the whole thing's been about. And a lot of the whole social systems that we've got are just designed to distract you from the obvious that's going on around you. You know, we keep you involved in wars and TV shows and competing with the neighbors and ISIS and Ebola and anything they can to distract you. And so that you just don't notice that you're being discarded, your children being thrown away, you know, you're being led off to wars to kill other people's children in other countries and all of this sort of stuff. It's all about depopulation, Mel, the whole thing. Limiting the size of the useless eaters on the planet. They only need enough people to run the infrastructure. They don't need anybody else. So what they've got to do is find people that are willing to fight the wars and are willing to support the system. And keep those guys and just exterminate everybody else. And that's what they're in the process of doing.
Offline, we're discussing a little bit. I'm not going to name any names yet, but transhumanism. You know, we have all this technology at our disposal. We can do with a phone now what the Apollo mission couldn't even do with a Casio watch. So we're embedding that into our children, this technology. You take a phone away from a child these days, and it's almost like if you took crack away from them. Do you see in the future where technology will be literally embedded into somebody's brain, and that will be the new human 2.0?
Well, that's what they would want to do. That's what they're trying to do. I don't know whether they will. I mean, I'm sure there will be some people that will embrace that type of reality, but there'll be a lot of people who don't. There's a lot of people who understand we have inner technology that is far, far superior to anything they can offer us digitally. And there are a certain amount of people who... Like Ray Kurzweil, there are people who want to push this transhumanist agenda. There are people who are now working actively to create robots that exceed us in intelligence, robots that are actually more intelligent than human beings. And I think this would be a good idea. There are other people who think this would actually be a very, very terrible idea and would lead to very, very bad things. And I'm one of them. And I don't think we'll go there. I mean, I think... they will try, but I think the human race may even split. I mean, there may be a certain section that goes there. There may be a certain section that doesn't. But I think that there's going to be something really, really major happen soon. I wouldn't be surprised if there's like an aerial delivery of some massive virus. Now they've got everybody prepared for Ebola. Then all you've got to do is have the leaders go to some of their underground bases and work on their super intelligent robots and come out when everybody's decomposed, you know. So they've got the means to do this, and they're preparing the world for this sort of thing. So, I mean, the transhumanist agenda is going ahead, but how far it goes, I don't really know. I don't know whether most of the world will embrace it. I think they'll have to depopulate a lot of the world to get people to embrace this, and, of course, that's the plan. That's what they're doing now.
A few years ago, there was a TV show here in the United States called The Event. There was a black president, a plane, a commercial airliner being used as a weapon. Doesn't crash, but it disappears, and it appears somewhere else, almost like the Malaysian airliner. Another part of the plot was to create a pandemic in order to vaccinate the population, but the vaccine included a few bonuses to put into the people. It's almost as if they're putting the script, the season was canceled after the first one. I don't know why, but it's almost as if they were planting this, you know, predictive programming. Do you see predictive programming in Hollywood and TV?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. All the time. I mean, this wouldn't surprise me at all if that's what they're going to do with the Ebola virus. I'll just use it to be able to launch this global vaccine. Everyone will think Ebola is real. They'll make the vaccine mandatory, and that's it. And you've already got people in so much fear of it. People are all locked down in their own countries. They're scared to travel. They're this, they're that, you know. So you can already see where they're heading with all of this. It's just whether people are going to buy into it. But, yeah, the predictive programming is incredible. I mean, the movies that are coming out lately, it's incredible. And all the TV shows, there's a lot of it in there. A lot of it is just designed to get people to accept where we're going. And a lot of it, I mean, I think we create reality as well. If you can put enough of this into people's minds and get them thinking about it enough, well, we can go down that path as well, you know. That's the thing about us, you know. We can create whatever reality we want. We've created this whole mess that we're in now, and we can create any type of reality we want. You know, we've got so much potential to create an incredible world. And that's why I do what I do. I mean, I don't do what I do because I want to save the world, or I want to save humankind. I mean, I think all this is a big experiment anyway. I think it's just an experiment in consciousness. It's what we do with it. It's what we do with the information. I mean, I'm nearly 60. I won't be here forever. I don't have any real stake in the outcome of what happens to humanity. But I can see the potential that we have for something far, far better than the direction that we're going. And I wish to encourage that. Because I can see that potential, I think then there's a reason for me to be here. There's a reason for me to do what I do, because I can help people see this potential that we actually have. And that's why I do what I do, because we have that potential. I think that we'll create any reality we want. I don't think they will lock us down. No matter how hard they try, no matter how far they take it, eventually humankind is going to stand up and embrace its own power. I think that's our ultimate destiny, and that's where we're going.
You know, we manifest the thoughts that we entertain, but it's like cancer, as an example. So much hopelessness and despair, when in fact cancer is nothing but toxicity and lack of nutrition. And if you even tell somebody that, especially in the medical industry, they laugh at you. But the programming is so embedded into the population. Now that I've had the privilege of interviewing people who have found the cure for cancer, cancer is not a disease, it's just a symptom of our behavior, our toxicity, our exposure to chemicals. And you tell that to people, and they still want to go ahead with chemo, radiation, and surgery. I don't mean to get technical or medical here, but do you see this happening with other aspects of life? There's answers and hope, but people prefer to just live under a rock and not listen.
Very often they do, you know, because you're challenging their reality. You know, when you bring people this information, you're challenging everything that they thought was real. That's why it's so difficult to wake a lot of people up. You know, when you really, you know, the rabbit hole goes so deep, as you know. I mean, you start to see that there's little bits of corruption on the surface, like with your journey, perhaps. You know, when 9/11, you see, hang on, there's something seriously wrong here. And then you start going down the rabbit hole and you go, oh my God. The whole world and everything about it is completely different to what I thought. And this is what you're presenting to people. This is a huge, huge challenge to them, because you're getting people who are 30, 40, 50 years old. They've gone through their life. They've worked hard to get what they've got, and they thought that it meant something. And you come along and say, well, hang on a minute. You've actually been looking at the world from a different perspective, and everything you've done has been a complete and utter waste of time, because the world is actually like this. And this freaks the hell out of them. It's a huge paradigm shift for them. It's an absolute challenge to everything they thought was real. You've challenged their whole life up to that point. You're telling them that everything that they've done up to that point has been completely meaningless. This is hugely confrontational to people. And so what you've got to do is you just, you know, respect people, respect yourself, be nice to people, lead by example in what you do, and present them with information which will cause them to shift their perspective themselves and discover the truth for themselves, because real truth must be realized. It can't be told. No one will ever listen to the truth. It freaks them out too much. They have to discover it for themselves. And when they discover it, it's like you, when you looked at 9/11 and you went down the rabbit hole, there was a moment when the light bulb went off and you realized the reality for yourself. And that was what was so profound about it, was your own realization. So that's what we have to do, is we have to provide a pathway towards self-discovery and self-realization for people, so they can discover the truth for themselves. Otherwise, you're confronting their reality. It's a huge challenge to them, and they will shut down, and they will never, ever open that doorway again. And so you've got to be very, very careful how you go about it when you're waking people up.
You have to point at the door, and it's their choice to open that door and go through it if they want. But, you know, it's like I thought I could pay my mortgage and own my home. But property taxes never stop, so try it. To stop paying your property taxes. So we never own our homes.
Well, yeah, you don't. And you can't own the earth anyway. It's like I often say, you know, if you've spent all this money on a home and you live there and you've got to go back to it all the time, it keeps coming. You can't go and live your life and just follow synchronicity. You've got to keep coming back to this place because it owns you. You know, you're too scared to go out and leave your house because you're scared someone's going to come and steal it all. It owns you. You don't own the house. It's going to be there after you die. You're only here for a short while. You don't own anything. You know, you can't own the earth. You're just using stuff for a while, sharing space with other people, sharing space with other things, but you don't own them. You know, you don't own anything. You don't even own your body. It's just on loan. You know, so that's the way I look at things. I think ownership is a fraud. The concept of ownership is what's created a lot of the problems that we have. I mean, there's stuff that I share space with, but if I really love something, really, really, if I have some item that I really, really love, I usually give it away. I give it away to someone because it's something that I love, and I'm not going to give them something that I don't love. And if I love this so much and it's brought so much joy to my life, well, maybe it will do the same for them. And I can't own it anyway. It's just an object. I'm only here for a little while. I'm a temporary piece of consciousness in this reality, just here for the blink of an eye. I can't own anything. And I give so much of my stuff away. My ex-wife used to get so annoyed at me. Why do you give all your stuff away all the time? I say, because I love it. And she couldn't understand it, you know. But I want to bring joy to people. I love this, and it brought me so much joy. I want to bring some of that joy to this person. And she couldn't understand it, why I would give away all my possessions all the time. But that's just the way I've always been through my life. You know, ownership is such a fraud, Mel. It really is. And it locks people down to certain places on the earth where they're not able to leave. And so that little piece of perceived ownership actually owns them.
That is true. That is true. And going around the world again, is there a single government? I was thinking the other day, is there a single government in this world that has not gone rogue? You know, take, for example, Libya. Everybody demonized Muammar Gaddafi. And I even had, that's why I say that I love when you come on, because I know that we are more or less on the same, you know, wavelength. But I have had people who started arguing with me that he was a dictator, that he was responsible for the Lockerbie bombing. And when you start giving them facts, they don't like when you shatter their paradigms, and they don't like it that I tell them no. They had the best literacy rate in all of Africa, and all the good things that Gaddafi did, they still don't get it.
There's no evidence that he was responsible for the Lockerbie bombing either. I mean,
no. You know, actually, there's evidence to the contrary provided to me by Congressman Jim Traficant, the one I was mentioning to you offline.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, you know, people just believe what the media tells them. I mean, Gaddafi, you know, Libya was a shining example of what could be achieved by countries in Africa. And we went in and destroyed that, every single piece of it that we could. And Libya is now a failed state. So, you know, people just have to really, really look at this. You're not fed the truth by any of these people. Never, ever are we fed the truth by the media. Yeah, you know, we have these opinions of people, but they're not our own. You know, it's the opinion that the media has given us. And we really need to step back and look at things, you know. Look,
we're not parrots.
I think maybe the Icelandic government, I mean, they threw the bankers out.
All right.
That's about the only one that I would possibly have any hope in at the moment. You know, I when I was going across Europe, I didn't see any honesty from any governments across Europe. You certainly don't see it in England. You certainly don't see it in America. You certainly don't see it here in Australia. So, you know, you go to third world countries, Peru, I mean, all these governments are completely corporatized. They've all sold out to corporations. I think that all of our governments are rogue. I don't think it's just Israel. I think all of our governments are rogue. But I think any government that supports Israel is a rogue government, because Israel is a rogue state. Israel is responsible for so much mayhem on the planet at the moment. All of the conflicts in the Middle East, all of this mess, 9/11, the whole lot, this is all Israel. So any government that supports that seriously needs looking at. If you're in a country where your government is supporting Israel, well, Israel is just carrying out a war crime, which is Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip itself is a war crime. Collective punishment is a war crime. The bombing of churches is a war crime. Bombing of mosques is a war crime. Bombing of ambulances, hospitals, schools, children, the use of flash-A bombs, dime ammunition, white phosphorus, all of these things are war crimes. If your government is supporting this country, then your government is in the process of carrying out war crimes, and you have an obligation to withhold your taxes from that government, because your taxes are carrying out war crimes. You have an obligation, you have a duty. It's actually against the law for you to pay taxes to a government which is supporting war crimes. So we need to pay attention to this. We need to do something about it. That's something we can do. We can hold back and say, look, do you support Israel? Well, Israel is engaged in a war crime. If you argue that, then I give you Gaza Strip. This is a war crime. The whole thing, everything about Gaza Strip is a war crime. So this is something we can use to withhold taxes from our governments, and we should all do this. We should all stand up and make noise about this. Unfortunately, many people don't because they're programmed into believing Israel are the good guys. That's the problem. So again, it's down to the media. Media complicity is a huge problem in this planet. You know, the media are as guilty as war crimes as our governments are. So we've got to find some mechanism with which to address this. But if we don't name it for what it is, then it's never going to be addressed. So you've got to be prepared to stand up and do this and name this and say, and tell your government, why are you carrying out war crimes? Why are you supporting the war crime, which is Gaza Strip? You know, and they've got nowhere to back down from that. They've got nowhere to go from that. I mean, take a copy of the Geneva Convention with you and say it to them. Point it out, all the crimes it's carrying out, you know.
And just because we haven't seen it in the news lately doesn't mean that it's still not happening. Do you think that the Ebola, quote-unquote, crisis is a distraction to keep us looking away from, say, Gaza and other things?
To keep us looking away from the whole situation in the Middle East. I mean, all of this came out as soon as Israel started to implode from what it was doing in Gaza. Suddenly we had Ebola, suddenly we had ISIS. We got all of this stuff happen because of the amount of backlash Israel was getting from what it was doing in Gaza. And now we've got al-Sisi sort of doing Israel's job for them. I would suggest that the attack that just happened in Sinai was very likely Israel as well. I mean, you've got to look at it. Who benefits from attacking the Sinai? Who benefits from closing down that checkpoint? Certainly not Gaza, certainly not Hamas, certainly not any Arabs. The only people who have an agenda to keep Gaza locked off is Israel. So that's where the attack came from, for sure.
You know, when I think of ISIS, it's a cancer that's metastasizing around that area of the world. I think that cancer needs a host, or a virus, or a bacteria. They need a host in order to survive. Now, ISIS has weaponry. They have a lot of money. They have cars. They travel around. They get trained. Who provides that to them?
Well,
with the intelligence apparatus that we have, and now if I transfer more than, say, a few thousand dollars to another country, all of a sudden I get the government knocking on my door. Are you going to tell me that they don't have the ability to pinpoint where that's coming from?
Exactly. If you wanted to shut down ISIS, shut down its finances straight away.
Exactly.
They don't do any of that. You know, they don't do the obvious things. Of course they don't, because it's a Western-funded thing. The whole ISIS is a Western-funded thing. I mean, Al-Qaeda ran out of steam, you know, but I mean, it's the same people. It's the same thing, you know. I mean, Al-Qaeda, you'll see, they've even got a website now. They're on the stock market or something as well. I mean, soon we'll have Al-Qaeda, we'll have a desk at the UN, you know, like, It's incredible the way things go, you know, but it's all the one organization. It's all Western funded. It's all designed to undermine the Middle East and to vilify the Muslim world. So it's obviously not Muslims doing it. It's someone who hates Muslims. And that would indicate that it's Israel, it's Mossad, it's CIA, it's NSA, it's Blackwater Z, Eric Prince, all of these crew. That's who ISIS is. It's not Islamists at all. They're just using that name to whip up this hatred of Islam.
What about the PG-13 videos of the latest beheadings? Do you buy them?
Oh, look, they're all fiction, brother. I mean, that first one that came out, you know, no blood. I mean, what was this? It looked like it was in front of a blue screen. And then when he saw the picture of the body with the head on top, the different knife to what he had in his hand.
How many times do you have to slice before blood comes out?
Exactly. It's a jugular vein. Once, and it shoots like a fountain. Right, he hacked into this guy's neck, and there was no blood. Okay, I mean, and this is a jugular vein. This is a lot of blood. This is a lot of blood, like a fountain of blood, you know. And you didn't see any. I mean, it looked like it was done in front of a blue screen. It really did. It didn't look real at all. And I don't think any of them are. I think the whole lot is MI5, MI6. I think it's all staged. I don't think that it's been done to, like, you know, so they can create this whole domestic terrorist threat and bring in new terror laws in England and all the stuff that they're doing. And again, you've got these terrible Islamic militants that are so out to kill Israel that they're cutting off the heads of American and British journalists. Why aren't they attacking Israelis, you know? Are you there, Mel?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. And the same thing's happening in Canada. I think Canada is next. And even though it's a puppet of Great Britain and the USA, I'm sorry to say to my brothers and sisters up north, you know how much I love you all, but let's call a spade a spade. The latest, quote-unquote, terrorist attack Someone said to me, I wonder if our prime minister will start talking about tougher laws. And I told him, give him a few days. Actually, it was a few hours after. And he said, the quote, the attacks will lead us to strengthen our resolve and redouble our efforts to keep the country safe and work with Canada's allies to fight terrorism, unquote. And I'm sorry you lost of your, you know, your one of your sons during the event, whether it was a genuine event or contrived by the same players. So it begins for Canada, Max.
Yeah, well, and Australia as well. I mean, our Prime Minister is really hot on the heels of all this. He's really trying to jump in there. He really wants to get Australia involved in the war, really wants to set us up as a terrorist threat, you know. So he's doing all he can. Keeps telling us, oh, yes, it's a shame that the threat that we're both facing now. And he's taking the gloves off and trying to pick a fight with Putin. It's incredible. I mean, Putin's a statesman. Tony Abbott's a pimple. You know, it's ridiculous. Tony Abbott is about as threatening as a wart on the butt of a dog, you know. So, I mean, his rhetoric towards Putin is absolutely incredible. I mean, unfortunately, the man's an imbecile. Tony Abbott is an utter imbecile. I mean, he redefines the word stupid. So you've got this guy's a national embarrassment. I wish he'd be removed from power. He's done an incredible amount of damage to this country, but he's doing all that he can to make sure that we're involved in this war on terror. I think he would love to see an explosion in Australia. He'd love to see some Australians killed or blown up. He's been reveling in the fact that a bunch of Australians died in the M17 flight over Ukraine. Right. And there's no evidence that that was carried out by Russia. There was actually all the reports of witnesses on the ground say that the plane was shot by a missile from the sky. It was strafed with machine gun fire, and then a plane flew off. So it's probably Israel again. I mean, it would suit Israel to do that. It was perfect timing because of what it was doing in Gaza. And I know, I mean, people think, oh, this guy's blaming Israel for everything, but I don't know. You look at the global situation and you see who benefits from this. The only person I can find that would benefit from that would be the United States or Israel. So that's who I think shot it down. I don't think it was Putin at all. And I don't think it was done by a ground to a surface wear missile. I think it was done by another plane.
Well, look at what, what's her name? Yulia Tymoshenko said in Ukraine. She said, we need to go and nuke everybody in Russia or the people, rebels and people in Russia.
Yeah,
and guess what her ties are? Ties are to, once again, Israel.
Mm, funny that, isn't it? Funny that. It always goes back. It's always seeing people say, oh, you're just anti-Semitic. Well, no, I'm just looking at the people involved, and, hey, they just all seem to have ties to Israel. What do you say, you know?
I'm trying to find exactly the words that she used. Basically, she wanted to nuke them. Now, back to ISIS for a moment. You know, first, we're supporting them in Syria. We even have a photo up with our good old John McCain. All of a sudden, things change. Now we're bombing them in Iraq, and we're bombing them in Syria. Do you think we're bombing them in Syria because the end game there is to remove Bashar al-Assad?
Well, removing Bashar al-Assad is part of it. I mean, it's about destabilizing the Arab world. It's about sort of balkanizing the Arab world. They want to divide Syria up into two or three factions. They want to do that same with Iraq. They'll do the same with Libya. They want everything balkanized because once you've gone in there and you've divided the country, you've weakened the country. That's what it's all about. Syria is an ally to Iran. So they're trying to destroy all of the Arab world around Iran so they can go into Iran. And Iran's a beautiful country. Iran's, you know, got a large Christian population, large Jewish population as well. They're quite happy to be there. They don't want to leave and go to Israel.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, and it hasn't had a war with anyone, hasn't attacked anyone in 270 years. The only war that it's had was with Iraq, which we started. So, you know, Iran's
and we funded both of them.
Yeah, Iran's a peaceful nation, always has been. That's what it's about. It's about destabilizing the area. I mean, Assad, it wouldn't matter who was in place. It wouldn't matter. They'd be vilifying him as saying he was this and that. I mean, and Assad's done some bad things. Of course he has. He's a politician. All politicians do bad things. That's just a prerequisite of being a politician. But it doesn't matter who it is. It's just about destabilizing the region. And as you can see, they're going around doing it everywhere. They'll probably go into Jordan after they've done Syria.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll go into it. They're doing it everywhere. I mean, Jordan's getting a lot of flack at the moment. So, you know, they'll go all over the place until they've destabilized the entire Arab world. And then they'll just divide.
Isn't this what happened hundreds of years ago? Isn't this what happened hundreds of years ago in Africa? There was peace and harmony in Africa. Tribes were divided by rivers. All of a sudden, the Europeans came along and they started conquering. And of course, all the tribal warfare started happening. Then we have Saddam, and he was not a saint. I get that, but he kept the tribes in harmony. The Kurds, the Shias, and the Sunnis. And boom, what happens now? Tribal warfare everywhere. The same thing will happen in Syria. You have the Alawites, the Sunnis, and the Shias once again.
Yeah, it'll happen all over the place. That's the main plan. Destabilize the region so it's not a viable force. So they don't want any strong Arab nation. That's the thing. The West doesn't want any Arab nation to rise as a strong power in the East. That's what Iran is at the moment. Iran is a strong nation with a solid voice that could be used to unite the Arab world. They don't want any strong Arab nations at all to rise. Nothing that could be a threat to the control of the United States or the West has over the region. And the only nations that are sort of being left alone are nations like Saudi Arabia, which is a brutal dictatorship, brutally totalitarian regime. I mean, the very day that the ISIS beheading came out, there was 17 people beheaded in Saudi Arabia that
day. Right.
One guy for suspected witchcraft. That's very progressive, isn't it? You know, so this is the type of these are our allies. You know, it's one of the most brutal dictatorships, most horribly oppressive to women in the world, in the history of the world, and we support them. You know, they've virtually got a revolving door to get into the United States. You know,
but wait a second, Max. Women have the right to vote there. They just can't drive to the voting booth.
Yeah, exactly. Women can drive in Gaza. You know.
That's right.
So, you know, I mean, there's a large Christian population in Gaza as well, you know. So, you know, we're not told anything, but it's about destabilizing the whole region. That's what it's all about. And they'll just keep going until they destabilize the entire Arab world because, you know, divide and conquer. That's what it's all about.
Well, don't forget that there's some headlines here. ISIS militants claim the U.S. accidentally airdropped them free weapons.
Yeah, accidentally, of course. I mean, what we've been doing is dropping weapons to ISIS in Syria, and they've been funneling them straight over the border to ISIS in Iraq anyway, and then we're bombing them in Iraq. And the whole ISIS thing's been cooked up because we wouldn't let them go in and bomb Syria. You know, it was a huge public outcry about that back in 2013 when they wanted to go in there. The global public opinion stopped that war happening. But now this whole ISIS threat, it's been escalated and escalated and ramped up by the media and hyped up so much that they're just going in and airstriking anyway. You know, and look, you know, and Obama's saying, oh, it won't be an act of war. It's a limited strike, no boots on the ground. You're kind of like what the Japanese did in Pearl Harbor, huh? Limited strike, no boots on the ground. Of course, it wasn't an act of war, was it, you know?
And even that, that's, we have to revise that piece of history because I think, I get flagged by saying this. One of our biggest traitors, if not one of the biggest traitors, was Roosevelt. He knew that the Japanese were coming. And the reason why they were coming was because we imposed a oil embargo onto them. And
exactly.
By then coming here, he let it happen.
Yeah, and they moved all the good ships out of Pearl Harbor and put them on the other side of the island.
Exactly.
They knew exactly what was going on.
Yes, the Australians told us. The Australians were the one who told us days or weeks before that the Japanese were coming.
Exactly. But for Obama to have used that phrase, it's not an act of war. It's a limited strike, no boots on the ground. It immediately made me think of Pearl Harbor. You know, and yet that was this big outrage and brought America into World War II, and yet they're prepared to go and do that to another country and say it's not an act of war. That shows an incredible, incredible double standard there, Mel.
Now, why do you think that people, even in 2014, still get their information on the 6 o'clock news, and when they listen to people like you and I or other great hosts out there, they basically roll their eyes?
Well, because they just don't believe that the media would lie to them. They don't believe that their government would lie to them. They think that it's not possible. No, they've got safety checks in place. They get in trouble if they lie. They have to tell you the truth. There's all sorts of media rules and stuff, you know. I don't understand. These people wrote the rules. They wrote the rules to protect themselves, not to afford you remedy, not to afford you any type of truth or any type of life, but to protect themselves. That's what the system's for. You know, that's what all this crime is created for, to protect the system. Now, how to create crime? How to create a police state? All you got to do is create lots of laws. Now, every law you create a new crime. If you want to create a police state, all you got to do is make the crime figures look really high. So how do you do that? Well, you make it illegal to do everything. Make it illegal to walk your dog on the beach, to stand on the grass, to do this, to park here, to do this, to do that. All these little everyday activities that we all do normally, illegal to go fishing here, illegal to do this, illegal to do that. And suddenly they look at the books and go, oh my God, look at the crime figures. And we're looking out going, well, I'm not seeing a lot of crime everywhere, but hey, according to these figures, the crime figures are astronomical. It's because all these new laws have been created and all these everyday activities are now classed as crimes. They go, oh my God, look at the crime figures. We need more police. We need more laws. Every law you create a new crime. Then you need more police. So suddenly you've got a police state that's been built around you and nobody did anything. All the government did was create more and more laws because every time they create a law, they create a crime. That's the way it works, and that's the situation we've got in. That's how come we've got this police state being built around us. Well, we didn't really do anything to deserve it. The crime rates didn't really go up, you know. And most of the crimes in our society are because of people in a state of shortage anyway, which is a direct result of the money system. So the whole thing has been contrived, Mel.
And I bring this up because the powers that want to be, they want to create an imagined reality via the government, media, dogma, etc. So they create this psychology of belief. And to question it, as I was saying before, it used to be bad, but now you're labeled a terrorist. They have absolutely no respect for the people, Max. Why do people keep following the script every few years, expecting that something will change? Why should we care about new puppets if the puppeteers are always the same?
That's the thing, and this is why I don't vote. It's why I don't participate in the political process at all. I think it's completely flawed. I think that these people are just puppets, you know. But unfortunately, people are just programmed into believing what the media tells them, and they don't have time to think about it objectively. They're too busy running on the treadmill. You know, they have to pay to be alive. They've got to try to keep their head above water. They keep making the debts a little bit higher, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. So you've got to run a little bit faster all the time. Whenever people start to wake up, they have some new scare, Ebola or whatever, you know, and then put the prices up a little bit more. People keep running. They've never really got time to stop and look around. And they've got all of these different social activities they've got to indulge themselves in when they do stop. You know, the kids want to go to tennis and the kids want to go to this and this and that. And you've got to do this. The wife's got to go to the country club. You've got to have all these different social standards that we meet so that we appear as, you know, viable people in the eyes of our peers because we judge ourselves by these parameters. So we just don't have time to look around. And even if what you're saying is true, I don't want to know because I've found this little niche that works for me and I'm quite happy on my path. Leave me alone. I don't want to know about it. I can get through it if I just stay here. You know, that's the mentality that people have, unfortunately. You know, programming. I mean, they're trained to think this way. You can't judge them poorly because of it. It's unfortunately the programs that they're running. And people have found a way through the system whereby they can survive and it works for them and they don't want you to come along and rock the boat, you know.
Will we ever see a time in our life, Max, when direct, let's call it open source democracy, will replace our existing system? In other words, you and I, every person listening to us, will have a say on what matters to us as opposed to having someone who gets elected and immediately becomes the best politician that money can buy. In other words, you and I have a computer and we can vote for every single piece of legislation.
I think that there will be a time when we come to something like direct democracy. I think it's inevitable. You know, it will get to that. I think we've got a long way to go to get there. This system kind of has to implode in many ways, but I think it is. I think it's in the process of imploding now. I mean, the more they do, Mel, the more people wake up. I mean, this whole situation at the moment, it's like a freak show. You look at the world with ISIS and Ebola and all the stuff that's going on, the imploding of the EU and these sanctions against Russia, and it's insane. It's absolutely incredible, and it's waking more and more people up. I don't think they have any hope of locking us down. I think that we will get to a state where the people have had enough, and whatever it turns into, it will turn into something better eventually. I think the human race will get through this.
If there's a statesman out there that I think has common sense right now, is Putin. And I get attacked by saying that all the time. But I've researched this a lot. I've looked into the economy of Russia. I've looked into what he's done for the country. And, you know, maybe he's not 100% perfect. But some of the things he's done, he stood up for his country. And he has taken Russia back from the ashes, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, he has. I mean, I think he's probably one of the best statesmen on the planet at the moment. And again, I don't trust him. He's a politician, you know. So, you know, he's definitely not the good guy. But he's the best of what we've got at the moment. At least he's making a stand. At least he's talking sense, you know, and not many other politicians are. Certainly no one in the West is. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing, really. I mean, who would have thought we'd get to a situation where Putin was the good guy? You know, it's such a far cry from where we were 10 years ago.
And I think if it wasn't for him, we would have attacked Iran already and Syria, too.
Yeah, probably, very likely. Although there has been a lot of public outcry against it, but yeah, very likely we would have. I mean, they're really pushing for it. You know, Israel is desperate for World War III. Israel's desperate to create as much conflict as it can, and so that's the wild card. But people are waking up to what Israel is now. Israel is imploding. It's being sacrificed. It's been done on purpose, I think. They've realized that Netanyahu overstepped his mark with what he just did in Gaza. And he was told to stop that. I mean, there's no way he just decided to stop that ground assault. He was told from higher up that it's time to pull back because you're creating a lot of mess. And that whole conflict into Gaza, that created millions upon millions of new Palestinian activists out of people who'd never even heard of Gaza Strip before. So they really shot themselves in the foot with that. And it's caused a lot of people to really pay attention to what's going on around the world, which is why they've escalated things so much. And we're getting it from so many angles now, you know, with Ukraine, with Ebola, the aircraft being shot down, with what Sisi's doing in Sinai, you know, Syria. There's so much going on now. All the laws coming in our countries, they're doing everything they can to keep us distracted and to lock us down and to prevent us from paying attention. But I don't think it's working. I don't think it's working. The more they do, the more people are just looking around and going, well, what's going on here? This is a circus. This is a complete circus. None of this needs to be happening, you know?
And let me emphasize that I know many, many Jewish people, and even people in Israel, people with a conscience. So when I talk about Israel, I'm not sending a blanket statement out there because I have very, very good Jewish friends and even some of my family members. But they have a conscience. They can speak and say, this is wrong. When is it going to stop? The problem is that when they talk, then they're criticized by, you know, Abe Foxman and the rest of his crew in the ADL.
Yeah, by the right wingers. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's why I'm so against people attacking the Jews. And with people may say that's what I've been doing on the show today, but I haven't. I've been attacking the government of Israel. And these people are fake Jews. These guys are Khazars anyway. And the Jewish people are the ones who suffer because of it. But the only people who are going to change the government of Israel is the people of Israel. So it's no good attacking and vilifying these people. You've got to understand how programmed they are. They're programmed into the belief system that they've got. And you're not going to save anything by attacking these people. I don't think the problem is the Jews at all. I think the problem is the Khazars that are masquerading as Jews and the programming that they've imposed upon the people of Israel. That's the problem. You know, and people are programmed. You can't judge people for what they do when they're programmed. And most of our societies are programmed too, so it becomes very, very difficult to judge these people. You've got to lead by example in what you do. Realize that what we're facing here is mind control to a huge level right across the planet in all of our societies and all of our cultures. And you've got to try to open doorways for people to self-discovery and lead by example in what you do. That's the most important thing we can do.
And I know there's no silver bullet. Most people are not willing to do the hard work. But how many lies are we prepared to accept before we say enough is enough, Mikes?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they crossed my line in the sand long ago, Mel, so I'm not prepared to take any more. And I'm quite happy to debate any politician or mainstream reporter on any of the things that I talk about on these shows. And I'm not prepared to back down anymore. I'm not prepared to take a back seat anymore. I won't allow the world to be destroyed around me. I won't allow my tax money to pay for the bullets that shoot my brothers and sisters in the Middle East. I won't allow my government to support these things. If they're going to, then they're not getting the support that, you know, I'm not going to support them in their actions. I won't pay them taxes. I won't have anything to do with them. And it's about time people stood up to make a difference, you know. All you got to do is be truthful, be in integrity. You know, if you stand in integrity and you speak your truth, there's very little weapons they can use against you. And don't view yourself as being unimportant. Don't view yourself as being powerless. You've got to understand the power that you have. If you stand in truth and integrity, There is nothing that is more powerful than that. And I do what I do because I love the human race. I don't do it out of hate for the perpetrators. I don't hate them. I don't hate Netanyahu. I don't hate Tony Abbott. I think they're idiots. They're psychopaths. But I don't hate them for it. I feel sorry for them more than anything. But I'm not going to back down to them. I'm not going to let them destroy people around me because I'm scared of them. I'm not scared of them at all. But I don't do what I do because I hate them. I do what I do because I love mankind. And I think that we have an enormous amount of potential that these people who believe they rule the world, believe they have the power to rule the world and the right to rule the world, that the crimes that these people commit, I mean, I just can't stand by and watch this anymore. And so I do what I do out of love for mankind because it needs to be done. And I think once people really look at reality for what it is and they look at the situation that we're in, there becomes a need to stand out. I mean, you can't have this information and not stand up and speak about it. If you do, you're part of the problem. You know, if you've got this information, you need to share it with people and you need to stand in integrity in all that you do. And if we do that, then we will change things, you know.
You know, it's all carefully crafted theater. Ebola is a carefully crafted medical theater. ISIS is a carefully crafted fear theater. Listen to people like Max, and the real actors of that theater and their agenda are revealed to you. Until we speak again, what's your conclusion, Max?
Well, I mean, everything that I just said, really, Mel. I mean, this is one of the most important times that we've ever faced on our planet. It's a time where we could go any direction. And it's up to the people out there to discover themselves and to stand in their truth and to stand in their integrity and to stand up and be counted and make a difference. And don't be afraid to call a spade. Don't be afraid to offer your truth to people. And be prepared to stand in your truth. That's what we need to do. And everybody can do it. Everybody out there listening to this can make a difference if you just stand in your truth and integrity and really, really know yourself. Like I went through earlier about what you are, the perfection of yourself. When you truly know that, then you become invincible. You really do. Nothing can stop you. Nothing can interfere with your level of power, your level of energy. You become unstoppable. You become an unstoppable force just by understanding your own perfection. And we all have the ability to do this. Now, don't ever believe you're just a little person because you're not. You know, all the great deeds that happened all throughout history were all done by one idea that one little person had. So don't think that you're not capable of doing that because you all are.
A raindrop becomes a huge snowball. Don't forget that, and the biggest conspiracy of all is the secret to your own potential. Max Egan, brother in truth, once again, thank you so much for coming over to your Veritas family.
Pleasure to come on, Mel. Always a pleasure to speak to you, brother.
Any plans, any presentations that you'd like to discuss before you leave?
Well, look, I'm doing a talk in the Rainbow Serpent Festival in Melbourne in January, and then I plan on launching Full Circle Project next year, and I really hope to bring that to the world next year. So that's going to be my main focus. Of course, I'd like to get into Gaza if I can at any time, but it's become almost impossible. Every step that I've taken seems to be thwarted, but I still want to get into Gaza as soon as possible. But the main focus of next year will be Full Circle Project.
Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com, thank you once again. Have a great day.
Same to you, Mel. My pleasure.
That this is offline now. Awesome, awesome interview, like usual. If you allow me, just I'll air the show on Thursday. But if you allow me the second segment, you know, our little exchange, I'll give it to you so you can release on your site in a few weeks.
Not a problem.
Okay. All right, Max. Well, take care, my friend, and have a good day.
You too, Mel. Thanks for the conversation, brother.
Hope you feel better soon.
Yeah, getting better every day.
All right. Keep me posted.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.